The House, please come to order. In accordance with the provisions of Uniform Rule 51, I turn the gavel over to the President of the Senate, the Honorable Mike Miller.
The joint session will come to order. The purpose of the joint session is to consider the governor's veto of Senate Bill number 141. The Senate Secretary will take the quorum of the Senate, please.
Senator Adams?
Here.
Senator Donnelly?
Here.
Senator Duncan?
Here.
Senator Ellis?
Here.
Senator Green?
Here.
Senator Helford?
Here.
Senator Hoffman?
Here.
Senator Kelly?
Here.
Senator Lehman?
Here.
Senator Lincoln?
Present.
Senator Mackey?
Here.
Senator Cornell?
Here.
Senator Pierce is excused. Senator Phillips?
Present.
Senator Sharp?
Here.
Senator Taylor?
Here.
Senator Torgerson?
Here.
Senator Ward?
Here.
Senator Wilken?
Here.
Senator Miller?
Here.
19 members present, Mr. President.
Will the Speaker please take the quorum of the House?
Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the record reflect that Representative Moses has previously been excused from a call to House today.
Members of the House, please vote to establish a quorum. Clerk, please lock the roll and tally the board.
37 members present.
There's a quorum present.
Mr. President?
Speaker Covina, or House Speaker? Representative Covina?
Not quite. Could I have brief evidence?
Senate, or the joint session will stand. Senator Taylor.
House CS for committee substitute for Senate Bill number 141, Finance Amended House, become law notwithstanding the governor's veto.
Is there debate? Seeing no debate, the question before the body, shall House committee
Mr. President?
Representative Covina.
I was sort of hoping that there would be a little bit of debate on the other side of why we should override the governor's veto. I can recall the debate on the floor earlier when we had the bill in front of us and with some problems on the bill. And I certainly don't want to be characterized as a person that's voting to sustain the governor's veto because I don't support a person's right to carry a concealed weapon. There are a couple of issues in the bill that I think do need addressed, were a reason to override or for the bill to be vetoed. One of them is, on page 4 of the bill, line 22, which for some reason very specifically states that only domestic violence and sexual assault shelters that are funded by the state that you cannot carry a concealed weapon into. And this was debated on the floor of the House. I could not understand then. I do not understand why that restriction is there, why it's only a state-funded one and not private ones. And I believe that we have been provided with a list of shelters in the state that, well, therefore, people would be allowed to carry concealed weapons in. And I think that is a flaw in the bill. The second one, Mr. President, I'm sorry I'm not completely ready for, but there is also the subject of when someone is mentally ill and mentally ill being able to have a concealed weapon. My understanding is under this bill, it would change current law so that it is not, though that someone must actually be adjudicated as mentally ill. Now, I've heard an argument that says, well, if somebody that's mentally ill but not adjudicated as such can have weapons in the open, why not concealed? I guess if somebody's walking down the street talking to themselves and going through a bunch of actions that make it real obvious that the person is not totally there mentally, and a policeman saw him carrying guns around, I suspect a policeman would say, well, wait a minute, I better check this out. But if they had concealed weapons, that might not go that way. Plus, they would be allowed to do so. So I think that is also a flaw. The third thing that I think is a flaw in this bill is that it's my understanding that there will be police officers in our state that will not be able to carry concealed weapons because they do not meet the requirements. And as a matter of fact, I believe there may be police chiefs in this state that will not be able to carry concealed weapons. Now, I'm told that there is a bill pending, which actually we're not supposed to be talking about bills that are pending. I can't understand how we would override a veto of a bill that obviously everybody has recognized the flaw and say, well, we're going to change the bill later down the road, trust us, rather than allowing the bill to stay vetoed and simply reintroducing the bill with the corrections that need to be made on it. And I think if that happened, this bill would pass unanimously. So I would hope that we would do what is the right thing. I certainly would never want to impugn anyone's motives that we are just vetoing it to sort of come back at the governor for some reason. That we recognize there is a problem here because there are corrections out there to be made. So rather than doing so, I would hope that we would just sustain the governor's veto and then pass a bill, a correct bill, one that we could all support here on the floor. Thank you.
Senator Taylor.
Yes, thank you, President Miller. Unfortunately, as always seems to occur when we get in one of these pressure situations, a lot of misinformation is distributed and concerns and fears are given credibility before people have a chance to really go back and look through the proposition. There were at least four different major propositions that have been debated and travel around the halls. Let me try to address a few of those. The first would be that somehow a person would be allowed by our passing this law to carry a concealed gun into a domestic violence shelter. Nothing could be further from the truth. This law certainly does not do that. In fact, all a facility would have to do is post a sign that says weapons are prohibited. Secondly, virtually every single victim within that facility will have filed a restraining order, and the subject of the restraining order is prohibited by both state and federal law from possessing firearms, period. And you find that at 18 U.S.C. 922, Provision G and Provision H. Alaska Statute 1866-100 also prohibits the subject of the court order, the domestic violence order, from communicating with or contacting the victim of that order. In addition, Alaska Statute 1161-200 provides additional penalties for the possession of a weapon while violating a court order. We have an entire plethora of remedies and criminal laws and statutes already on the books that provide full protection for the area of a domestic shelter. The opposition will indicate that indicted felons can somehow possess a weapon. That was interesting because I was trying to figure out how in the world a person under indictment for a felony, a violent act, could get back out on the street and have a weapon. Well, there's only two ways you get out on the street. There are two things that happen, I should say. One, you get out on the street with bail. The other is you stay in jail. No judge in his right mind is going to turn a violent felon loose without making it a condition of the bail that they cannot possess a weapon. In fact, they frequently will go out and confiscate any weapons that individual may have at their house and just keep them to make certain that person has no access to it. So then people have said, well, yeah, but he could buy a weapon. Well, no, he can't. I've distributed on the floor today a form by the Department of Treasury, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms that specifically makes it a federal crime to do so. If you are under indictment, fleeing from a felony, or are previously convicted, you cannot go and get any firearm. So neither do they have access to new firearms, nor do they are they going to be allowed to have their own firearms because of the bail restrictions. So that, I think that one is easily resolved if people will just look into the federal law and the state law. The opposition has also indicated that, that somehow we have changed the law in such a way as to allow mentally challenged people here, mentally ill people, to be able to carry concealed guns. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, what has actually been done in this law is the adoption of the federal standard. And that federal standard provides a specific and definable category of people who will be precluded from having firearms. It is enforceable. The interesting aspect of the existing law, when we in the legislature passed it a couple years ago, we thought we had properly addressed this problem. In fact, our law suffers from a vague definition, which we are told by the Department of Public Safety officials they can't confirm that even one permit applicant has been denied a permit based on the current definition of mental illness. It obviously isn't working as it should be. So as a consequence, this law that is before us today provides the federal standard, which is specifically enforceable and understandable. Because the federal law prohibits possession of firearms by any person adjudicated as mentally defective or who has been committed to a mental institution. Those are files and records that you can turn to. Another item that probably affected me and my district more than others, it was one I found interesting, was the comments made by the opposition that Senate Bill 141 would somehow allow people to carry weapons onto the Alaska Marine Highway System. Many of you will remember when this bill, the predecessor bill, the one we're amending through this act, passed, we debated that on these floors. And it was a matter of concern, and we made certain it was addressed. It is addressed today in this law, where we had specifically delineated, which means that it's precluded, that we now have a general statement, and that general statement is backed up by, let me go through this, 17 AAC 70.190. And that's a regulation, act of law, passed in pursuant to authorization given by this legislature through statute law, enforceable against any person attempting to board one of our Alaska State Ferries. And what they do is they require a person that has firearms, whether it's in their Winnebago or they've brought five guns up to go hunting with their son, they are required to have those guns locked in the vehicle or turned over to the purser, who then locks them up. So as a consequence, that law is still there, and you cannot carry onto a state vessel. The final one was the concern that somehow a very small amount, those probationary and new police officers, peace officers coming on in Alaska, would somehow be precluded. That was an interesting glitch that occurred when the advocates for the Alaska Peace Officers Association, the chiefs and the Department of Public Safety, convinced the sponsor of this bill to put in an amendment at the last hour, and I believe in good faith, without anyone knowing that it might have that impact. So as a consequence, legislation is already drafted, fast-tracked, and we'll take care of that problem. There is no difficulty. And even if we were to assume that that legislation was to have a difficulty, members of the Department of Public Safety have assured me that through regulation, the matter could be taken care of. There is no problem on this bill. In fact, this bill provides for Alaska and Alaska's citizens further protection for their right of self-defense. Protection that we scream. I think it's important to note that the state of Vermont allows every one of their citizens carry concealed. Those citizens don't have to pay a tax. They don't have to pay for a permit. They don't have to have a background check, submit fingerprints, have a photograph taken. They don't have to go through and prove that they have a course in competency on how to use the particular device that they're permitted for. They're one of the lowest states in the United States, in violent crime and misuse of firearms. But in Alaska, we have chosen to be much more suspect than that, and so we have set up an entire series of hurdles that must be crossed before you ever get a permit to carry concealed. And we have 7,400 Alaskans currently permitted today who have been carrying concealed for over 3 years. So what's the experience rate? The very same opposition that we faced in the past on this issue came up with all kinds of dramatic stories and fears and paranoia about what would happen if you allowed Alaskan citizens to carry the same gun under their coat when they're out in the field that they carried outside their coat. None of those allegations, none of those rumors have come true. In fact, we have only had a handful of permits revoked during that period of time. We've not had one revoked for a misuse of the firearm. I think experience speaks for itself. Hopefully those people who have concerns, and I believe those are honest and sincerely held concerns, hopefully those people can find some satisfaction in the fact that we have had a wonderful experience under the previous law, and that this law actually cleans up some of the difficulties that were in the old law. A better definition of mental health. A clearer definition of offense. Do you know, in the old law, we had listed an entire laundry list of offenses that would preclude you from having a permit or would revoke a permit. Unfortunate part of that is, if the person doesn't act, it's not on that list, you can't take the gun. Maybe a very violent act. Instead, now what we have stated is, and we would of course have to go back and amend that law every time we created a new offense, because it wouldn't be in that list. Now we have passed within this law a statement that includes all violations, both federal and state. So now we encompass the entire plethora of laws that are out there, and if new laws are passed by this legislature or the federal government, we don't have to go back and specifically amend this law to clean it up. I think it's time to make the law more accommodating for law-abiding Alaskans. The old law imposed tremendous restrictions and fees and so on. We've reduced some of those fees. And there are literally hundreds of thousands of Alaskans who will now be able, if they wish to carry concealed virtually wherever they want without restriction, without paying exorbitant fees, and without submitting themselves to needless bureaucracy once they have complied with our background checks, our fingerprinting, all of the stuff we have to go through. Those who pay the fees and submit to this bureaucracy shouldn't face more and additional restrictions. This is a good law. It's a law that had significant debate on this floor and the other, and it's a law that passed overwhelmingly. It's time to give those willing to pay the fees and to submit to those background checks and undergo the training and so on the very same rights as those who can openly carry today. Please vote yes and enact Senate Bill 141, notwithstanding the governor's veto.
For the education of the body, when we do get to the voting, so every member will know how it will go, the House will vote first, then the Senate will vote, and at that time I will ask if any members wish to change their vote, but both bodies will vote before I ask that. Representative Elton.
Thank you, Mr. President, I mean, I guess I somewhat expected the previous speaker to get up and thank the governor for pointing out a significant flaw that we didn't catch. And I think it is a significant flaw. I mean, we can talk about it as a glitch, but it's not a glitch in the lives of some people. For example, in my district, the police chief would not be able to carry concealed. He wouldn't be able to carry concealed. And I think that goes beyond a glitch, and I think it points out a significant problem. I'm glad the governor caught it. And I'm glad he did what he did, because it got our attention, and he found something that we should have found. And I guess I'm also somewhat confused, Mr. President, that if we don't have I was somewhat comforted with the iteration that the kind of things that some people have expressed concern about are not problems. But if they're not problems, I mean, why don't we just reiterate it in this bill also? I mean, I don't understand the resistance to making some of those corrections in this bill, if they're not problems anyway. Why don't we just reiterate it? Why don't we make it perfectly clear? And finally, Mr. President, I guess Just another point. Maybe somebody who has been in law enforcement or who is an attorney can clear this point up for us on the floor today before we take our vote. But I think that the way this bill reads, I mean, I'm sure that a rational judge would make a condition of release that you can't carry a firearm. But, I mean, that's assuming that person who has been indicted has been caught. And if they haven't been caught, they haven't been brought before the judge. And it seems to me that this precludes the state from then filing an additional charge against that person when and if that person is caught. Thanks, Mr. President.
Further debate. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I won't go on at length because I think most of the points that I was going to make have essentially been made, but I just want to put on the record the reason why I'm going to vote to sustain the veto. And I think the main reasons are the reasons that we debated and why I voted against the bill in the first place, that there were a number of problems with the definition of mental illness, with the women's shelter access issue, that just weren't fixed appropriately. And I think I just would like to observe a couple things. One about the mental illness. The federal law does say adjudicated or committed, but there's another category of, we now try to treat a lot of mental illness in the community, and there's a category of people that we haven't defined very well that under our previous mode of treating mental illness would have been committed but are now not. And that category of people are not dealt with in this bill or in the federal law. And it's complicated, and we had some letters that say that there's, you know, you can talk about it in a lot of different ways. And it is complex, but we ought to deal with that. We didn't deal with it. It's not dealt with in this bill, and that's one of the problems I have with it. The second thing, one of the comforting things was that almost certainly everybody in a women's shelter would have had a restraining order against a person that might have some violent tendencies. Well, that's not always the case. It's often the case, but it's not always the case. And why don't we just make it clear? Why do we have to leave little possible loopholes in their situations? And then the previous speaker made the point, you know, if it's so clear and there's no problem and the federal law is taking care of it, why don't we just give our citizens some comfort and some clarity and put that statement in the law? Why couldn't we have done that? And then, of course, there's finally the issue. I also am glad that the governor caught the issue that relates to police. Now, that may or may not be an issue now. If we assume that some other possible theoretical legislation might get passed soon, that maybe that's not a problem. But, Mr. President, what I don't understand is why, if we can fast-track that bill, hypothetical bill, why couldn't we just, in the same amount of speed, pass the correct bill? Why do we have to go through this process of first passing a flawed bill and then fixing it? With the same amount of speed, in fact, if we hadn't spent this time doing this, we could have spent this time passing the appropriate bill, passed the right bill. So for those reasons, not because I'm opposed to, and I do think that, and I would like to put on record too, I also think there are many things about the bill that actually are improvements, and I would like to vote for the bill. But with the pieces in there that are wrong, I can't bring myself to vote for it. I hope we will fix it. I hope, as if some other legislation comes along, that maybe some of these other issues will be addressed in a correct way and that we can all vote to do this, because I do think that the bill has some aspects that are positive as well as these omissions that I think really need to be fixed. Thank you.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. President. It seems to me this is one of those rare confrontational situations where nobody has really done anything wrong. The sponsor of the bill put in the provision at issue, the provision that concerns me most concerning police officers, at the end of the process, at the request of the police officers. It was, I think, this problem that we've identified now is one that no one caught. The governor caught it and I think appropriately spared us 8 months where that problem would be in effect. Now we're in a different position with a hypothetical bill, a bill that would correct the problem. We've by the governor's action, saved us 8 months of that difficulty with the Juneau police chief and others. And so we're now in a position to say, it is a problem, we have a fix for it, and we're going to do it very quickly. I've talked to the sponsor about the process for that bill, and because I feel that fix can be made very quickly, I'm more comfortable in voting to allow this bill to become law and to get that fix done quickly. I've also asked for her attention to some of the other small measures, and she's agreed to do that. So with those caveats, as I said, it's one of those situations where maybe everyone acted correctly and it ended up, despite that, in a confrontational situation. So I hope we can quickly resolve the remaining issues.
For the debate. Senator Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple things I wanted to point out in my support for this bill. I don't want anyone to infer that somehow I'm weak on domestic violence or don't support police chiefs and other people, as it was characterized, to not be able to carry concealed weapons. I just think that that issue has been taken out of context completely. Having been in law enforcement before, it's something of great concern to me, and in looking at it and looking at what the problem is, I don't consider it a problem. At the very worst, somebody might have to get a permit to carry a concealed weapon. But nobody can make me believe that a police officer is not going to be able to carry a weapon in the state. I won't go any further than that. I don't believe there's anyone on this floor, Mr. President, that is not concerned very deeply about domestic violence. It's one of the biggest problems that we have in the state right now. And for anyone that's out there in the public to listen to some of the testimony, to go away thinking that somehow this bill is going to allow for serious crimes involving weapons to be committed in domestic violence shelters is beyond my imagination. First of all, we have laws for lots of things that people commit violations against. Because we have a law against drunk driving, does that stop people from driving drunk? You look, pick up the paper every single day and you see people. All we can do is put policy in place and hope that people will be responsible and following those laws. If somebody goes into a domestic violence shelter with a weapon with the intention of committing a very serious assault or murder, they will be charged with those appropriate statutes. I would suggest that this law does not allow somebody to carry a weapon into a domestic violence shelter and assault somebody without consequences under the law. That's absolutely not accurate. If somebody goes into a domestic violence shelter with a weapon, they're probably going in there for one reason, and that's to commit a very serious crime. And some sign isn't, or some law that says you can't take it into the shelter is not going to stop them. Also, the shelters do have the option of putting up a sign which says no concealed weapons allowed. If they carry it in there, they are violating the law. So my vote in support of this bill when I voted for it remains the same in my vote to overturn this veto. I'm confident that the problems that were expressed are not problems.
Representative James.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to say that I am planning to override the governor's veto on this bill, but the subject of domestic violence makes me rise to say how I feel about this issue. Because it's always assumed that the person carrying concealed is the aggressor. And as a woman, I believe that we need to be able to protect ourselves from those kinds of aggressors. And I would be very distraught if I were to believe that a woman who was carrying a concealed handgun with a permit wanted to get access into a domestic violence shelter because she was being pursued, that she would not be allowed to be getting in. And I have asked the people who are very concerned and understand all about domestic violence and said, what happens if a person comes up with a concealed handgun and wants to get in? And I've seen this domestic violence. What are you going to these domestic violence shelters? What's she going to do with it? And they said they would let her in. I'm comfortable that they would let her in, and I am going to support the override of the veto on this bill.
For the debate. Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to make just a couple of quick comments, if I can, on the legislation, because I think the debate's been interesting, and it's pointed out a real problem that we do face, is that no one's really sure what this bill does, if we override the veto, what this bill actually does. I think the minority leader pointed out pretty clearly some concerns that have been expressed to each and every one of us. And I know I've had contact from people who work in the field of mental health who are very concerned about the provisions of this bill and what it does mean to the safety of the people of this state. But what it does mean as far as mental ill individuals being able to carry a concealed handgun. I know I've been contacted by people who run domestic violence shelters. I've seen letters. And they're very concerned about the provisions of this piece of legislation. I know I've been contacted and you've been contacted from people who work in the police, or police officers, and prosecutors. And they're very concerned about the provision that says a convicted or a indicted felon could still carry a concealed weapon. They're concerned that felons may be able to maintain a permit and carry a concealed weapon. Those were pointed out by the House Minority Leader as serious problems with this piece of legislation. The Senate Majority Leader responded to each one of those. I believe that there were some cases where his response was not correct and was not on point, but I'm not an expert in that area. But we should resolve that difference and that conflict. And how we resolve that difference and that conflict is we do it through a committee process. We do it through a process that's set up so that we can have a clear debate of the issues, so that we can have before us the experts on the issues, those who believe there are problems with this piece of legislation and those who believe there are not, and so that we can make a rational and a reasonable judgment on that before we put it into law. That's what we should be doing. Instead, today we're here enacting into law a piece of legislation that has serious problems brought to our attention, serious concerns brought, and we're not given the opportunity to hear the public, to hear the experts in the field, to determine how we could structure the legislation to take care of those concerns. And unfortunately, the hypothetical piece of legislation that we're talking about doesn't address the concerns other than that of whether or not police officers can carry concealed handguns. And that, I think that's a serious oversight not to address that issue before we enact it into law. This is not a case of where we're trying to restrict what law-abiding Alaskans can do as far as carrying concealed guns. The governor's veto was really a statement saying we want to ensure that only law-abiding Alaskans can carry concealed weapons. We want to protect law-abiding Alaskans because of the questions about indicted felons and because of the questions about domestic violence. Mr. President, I really think it would be more responsible for us to adopt a position that there are many provisions of this bill that make sense, there are still many questions, and that we need to go back through the committee process and work that through, resolve those questions, and then enact a piece of legislation that really will do the job. And this is not a question about whether we believe that the people of this state should have the right to bear arms and whether or not those rights should be infringed by the state or by the federal government. That's in our Constitution. We have that right. In fact, several of us on this floor were in the legislature when that issue was debated year after year after year. You and I, Mr. President, served in this body. We voted for that constitutional amendment that the right to bear arms would not be infringed. We served in the other body together and voted for that amendment when the voters passed it in 1994, that the right to bear arms wouldn't be infringed. That's not the question here. The question is one of safety, of who should carry a concealed weapon, and how it can be done safely, and how we can protect the public. That's the question, and that's what we should be voting on. And that's the type of legislation we should be passing. Legislation that doesn't infringe people's right or intrude on their right to bear arms and to carry a concealed weapon, but that we want to ensure while they have that ability that we also protect the public. That's done in a safe manner, and that we ensure the public that law-abiding residents are the ones who are carrying those concealed weapons. I'm going to vote to sustain the veto. I hope that through the process, as the hypothetical bill is moved through, that these other provisions will be addressed. I have not had those assurances. I wish they would have been introduced as part of that hypothetical bill. They weren't. But I hope during the committee process they will be debated and will be added. But, you know, I've been around this process, as you have, Mr. President, a long time. It's often very difficult to forecast what's going to happen in the legislative process. And even though the provision on police officers seems to have unanimous support, we need to correct it. I've seen bills that have a lot of momentum and a lot of unanimous support, and it should be put in place. All of a sudden, somewhere they get lost in that committee system and tied up in other issues, and somehow it never happens. I think that's too big a risk to take. We shouldn't override this veto, betting that we're going to pass a piece of legislation that's going to correct a major flaw and then maybe consider correcting other very terrible provisions. The more responsible approach, and I know, Mr. President, you believe in responsible action in this process, the more responsible approach is to not override this veto and take a good piece of legislation through the committee process.
Representative Ryan.
Mr. Chairman, the courts of the United States of America and the various political subdivisions have made a determination that the rights enumerated in the Constitution are divided into two classes. One, they are rights, and then they are absolute rights. And since the 1994 amendment wasn't put on as an absolute right, and as much as we couldn't fool around with it, we have the right as legislators through our elections to offer up certain enumerations of how these rights shall be exercised. And even though I believe personally that this is an absolute right, the right to defend yourself and or your property and your family. I am going to vote to override the governor's veto because I think that this is a reasonable determination of what this constitutional amendment is. I had the opportunity as a legislative assistant to work very diligently in the formation of the first law that we passed for concealed weapons. And I take pride as a legislator in helping to make it a better law.
Further debate. Seeing no further debate, Senator Hufford.
I think you need to go back to the very simplest explanation. You know, the questions raised, are they an indicted felon? If they're an indicted felon, they're in jail or they're on bail. If the system doesn't give them a condition of release that deals with it, then the system is wrong. The system has many ways to deal with that. And, of course, the term indicted felon means they've already been a felon, so they couldn't have had a firearm under federal law anyway unless they've gone through the massive process of rehabilitation. Mentally ill, the Department of Public Safety could not confirm a single case where they've denied a permit based on the state's definition of mentally ill. And if they had, they probably would have lost a court case because the definition is unconstitutionally vague. It is a definition to provide service that we all want to be broad, and the mentally ill community or the mentally ill advocates community wants it to be broad. We go to a federal definition that's truly enforceable. It's a step strengthening the law, not weakening the law because it is enforceable. Other than the member from North Pole or Delta, nobody talked about the DV shelter question from the point of view of the victim. You know, the person that we're talking about trying to keep from carrying a gun is going to violate the DV order, he's going to violate the federal law, he's going to violate the sign, and we think adding another shield in front of that is going to somehow protect the victim. If the victim is in a community that doesn't have a police officer handy and doesn't have any other protection, and has to give up their only means of protection when they're outweighed by the potential perpetrator by 100 pounds, that's who loses if you don't let someone have the right to go through the process and defend themselves. It's the victim that we should be thinking about, not the perpetrator. The perpetrator is already breaking numerous state and federal laws. And finally, I think it's important to point out that the law enforcement community did not oppose this legislation when it went through. There were glitches, there were conditions, there were arguments back and forth, but in general, the law enforcement community supports the right to keep and bear arms. Thank you.
Further debate. Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate Minority Leader talked about risks and the safety of the public, and I think those are appropriate considerations, and I think that's why we should vote for this bill today. By not voting for it, we're risking that we're not going to provide these additional safeties to the public. Comprehensive reports and analysis of the effect of these kinds of laws in other states have pretty much conclusively shown that there's been a considerable reduction in major violent crime in other states that have done similar laws. And the conclusion of the experts that have looked at this, such as the University of Chicago, Tennessee Law Review, I have here looked at these kind of results, show that many criminals apparently just concluded that the risk of encountering a victim who could fight back just simply became too high. And as a result, violent crime significantly reduced.
Further debate. Seeing Representative Nicolai.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess the problem I have is, we keep talking about this other bill, but we don't know how many months or how many days this bill is going to become in effect. And yet we have this problem of the chief of police from Juneau not being able to carry a concealed weapon when this person is on call 24 hours a day. That is a grave problem to this city, one that we're going to be residing in for the next 4 months. There's a number of other problems that won't be taken care of until that bill is passed, and that has to do with domestic violence, domestic violence shelters in rural Alaska as well as in urban centers. It's a problem for people in rural Alaska, where we have VPSOs that aren't allowed to carry handguns at all. And then you have the perpetrators having the ability to carry handguns into domestic shelters, where a lot of times you have women that don't carry handguns. or haven't applied for the permit system. It'd be interesting to see the results of how many women have applied for it. But it still is a problem, and that problem won't be fixed until this other bill is passed. And so I think that this is the wrong direction that we're headed in, and overriding this bill. I think that we should have just let it stayed in its condition and introduced a bill and put it on a fast track. I'm not sure, you know, what's going to happen with this other bill that we're talking about. But just for the record, I'd like to enter those concerns into the record and my reasons for sustaining the governor's veto.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Very, very, very briefly, I've spent a year or two in law enforcement, and I can assure you and the other members, if I had one doubt that the glitch that we've talked about was not fixable, and it would not be fixed, and that there would not be a time in the state when a chief of police or a probationary police officer would be technically in violation of the law, I wouldn't support this veto override, and I am supporting this veto override.
Further debate. Seeing no further debate, question before the body, shall House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 141, Finance Amended House, become law notwithstanding the governor veto? Madam Speaker, would you take the roll of the House?
Members of the House, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll and tally the board.
31 yeas, 8 nays.
Will the Secretary please call the roll of the Senate?
Senator Adams?
Nay.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Duncan?
No.
Senator Ellis?
No.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Halford?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Senator Lincoln?
No.
Senator Mackey?
Yes.
Senator Parnell?
Yes.
Senator Pierce is excused. Senator Phillips?
Yay.
Senator Sharp?
Yes.
Senator Taylor?
Yes.
Senator Torgerson?
Yes.
Senator Ward?
Yes.
Senator Wilkin?
Yes.
Senator Miller?
Yes. Will the Secretary please announce the Senate vote?
14 yeas, 5 nays.
Do any members wish to change their vote? Will the Secretary please announce the combined total?
45 yeas, 13 nays.
And so, House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 141, Finance Amended House, has become law, notwithstanding the governor's veto. Senator Taylor.
Move that after unanimous consent of the joint session, stand and adjourn.
We are adjourned.
House, please stand at ease as a member.